This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Alrighty, hour number two. What's happening? Football Friday. Going to jump into college end of the pool now. We're doing it from our studios here, the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. One, you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time. Rocket can. What's happening? Hope everybody's doing great on this Friday. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206, Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney. We're going to get with Jonesy in a minute, our buddy Brian Jones, bounce around college football. We'll do a couple of segments here, and then we'll get to the magic last night. That was Fitzpatrick.
Fitzmagic.
He's just, I'll tell you, the guy, he's just got big ones. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah,
you know,
no, you're right.
He's got $60 million in the bank, probably more, because he got a lot of money from the Bills, remember?
Dude, I would guess more.
Think about
how long this has been, BT.
Yeah.
What is he, 15 years? I mean, he's been around for
seven
a minute.
Teams?
Yeah.
At least? Maybe more?
Yeah, he's done very well.
The guy
almost like he doesn't need to care, but he really does care.
That's why you got to respect him.
That's exactly right.
You got to respect him. Whether it's 60 or 80 million, he's got more money than you and I put together, so he's doing all right.
That's right.
So, you know, he's got a Harvard degree. He just loves the game, and we'll do this more thoroughly next hour, but to me, he's become one of the most interesting figures in a long time in the NFL because he doesn't have a ton of talent, but he's certainly a better athlete than you would think, and he's got a little better arm talent than you think as well. But like what he, you want to write him off? You want to? It's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Right.
Jeez, I mean, come on! And then all of a sudden he's out there whistling dimes and lowering his pads and going face first into linebackers and contorting his body and scoring touchdowns and throwing touchdowns. He really is amazing.
Yeah, he is amazing. $64 million he's made.
So I was pretty close.
Yeah, you were pretty close. And I think he's making four this year. Yeah, or maybe eight. No, he's making eight this year. So it'll be 70, 71 or so million dollars. He's done really well for himself for a guy.
Yes.
From an Ivy League school that people said, he's just a smart kid. Yeah, he's a smart kid who's a little bit of a baller as well. That he scored on his first three drives, and it felt like he was Tom Brady. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Moving him down the field, making every throw, because he was 11 for 11, I believe. He threw, like Mike Gesicki, who was their tight end, had one catch. One catch, 15 yards, touchdown.
No, that was a nice throw.
Oh, it was
top.
Great. That's what I mean. It was
up
a
top.
Great throw
by
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
And he had a drop, too, at the tight end.
That's right. So, I mean, yeah, Ryan, I did my sports minute on this yesterday, BT. Like, you look at the two teams that played last night. You look at their quarterbacks, and you're like, yeah, it's Fitz. Yeah, he's not the future. Of course he's not the future. Tua is, but Fitz is playing right now. You look at Gardner Minshew, and you're like, can he be a friend? Who knows? But you know what you get from those two guys? They professionalism and working their asses off. And this is different than the LeBron conversation we had in the first segment where your best player is your hardest worker.
Yeah.
In this case, your leader, your offensive leader, the guy who's in charge of that huddle, is your hardest worker and has this, I don't know, this moxie about him.
Yeah.
Even if it's not, you know, you don't expect him to be a superstar, that's important for teams that are building culture. And that's what the Dolphins have been doing for 2 years. That's what the Jags are in the process of trying to do. If it works, who knows if it works. And if it doesn't, then Doug Marrone is likely to be out. But, you know, for right now, you got to love what Miami's going through right now.
Imagine if he was like 6'5".
I know.
Like if he was like a specimen, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, he's pretty big. He's 230. So he's like put together, but he's
– How tall is he? 6'2"?
6'2", 6'1", 6'2", something like that. But yeah, he gives them a chance to win. I mean, week one, he looked horrible against the New England Patriots, but maybe the New England Patriots defense is actually still pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but week two, he was great. Week three, fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, don't sleep on Ryan Fitzpatrick.
No. I think most NFL fans by now know he's got a little talent. We'll get into Minshew, the Minshew aspect a little bit later, but the Dolphins needed the win. They got that Thursday night football. So week three, is upon us here. And, you know, Tig, you look at the college scene right now between the Pac-12 jumping back in, no surprise, the Big Ten jumping back in. We just talked before about the overhaul to the way the bowls are going to be structured in terms of eligibility. It's starting to feel, I know Notre Dame's not playing this, but I get it. There's some things that are still happening here, but I feel like college football season starting. Like, it's here we go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It does. But it's odd this week. So I'll just give you a perfect example because my Cavaliers, the Hoos, are playing this weekend, BT.
Interesting shirt you're wearing today, by the way.
Yeah, right. If I sit this way, it looks a little, like, inappropriate.
It does. You got to fix that microphone.
This way, you know, it's a mic. It is where it is.
The Hoos.
But anyways, they're playing Duke this weekend, BT.
Yeah.
Duke has played two games. They're 0-2. Virginia hasn't played yet. So while Duke is not vintage, clearly, and Virginia's supposed to be better, the Blue Devils have a significant advantage because they played two games already.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna start to see a little bit of that. We can ask BJ about those things as well because a lot of those teams have the same issues.
Yep, we've got BJ, Brian Jones, of course. We've got college football today coming up 3 Eastern. You got Zuck, Jonesy, and Rick Neuheisel. And, of course, Mississippi State, LSU, 3:30 Eastern. Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson, Jamie on the call. So, you know, listen, here we are, Jonesy. First of all, welcome back to the show, Brian Jones. What's up, dude?
Wait, hey, I'm glad to be a part of you guys' show. And listen to Tiki lowering the bar, lowering expectations for his
I have no idea. Look,
you know how it goes, B.
We lost our quarterback. You know what I mean? What do you want me to say? We're starting a kid at Brennan Armstrong I know nothing about. I know that Bronco.
We're going to find out, and you're right. Both of you guys are correct, man. I mean, this mixed match as far as starting for these schools and these different conferences and whole host of them, of course, Pac-12, MAC, and Mountain West are coming back online, as is the SEC. Will get started tomorrow. But, yeah, man, it's just been a hodgepodge of strategies, much like how we've been tackling COVID itself.
Yeah, for sure. And, by the way, maybe some of the younger fans who might not know, BJ, good enough to squeeze out parts of 4 years in the NFL back in the day. He actually scored a touchdown, Teague.
Nice.
And he's just a colorful, smart, great broadcaster, man. You just bring a lot of flavor to it. You always have. Dresses well, too. Let me ask you this, Bri. You look at the Pac-12, all the things we just ran out. Pac-12 coming back, Big Ten obviously back, the overhaul to the bowl system in terms of eligibility. I'm going to ask you an open-ended question. You take us wherever you want to go just to start. Right now, what is the most interesting thing about college football to Brian Jones?
Wow, that is an outstanding query, my friend.
You know,
what stands out to me is how the various ways, as we were just discussing, institutions, programs, conferences are handling this disruption of their seasons and across the board, no matter if you're talking college football, you're talking pro football, you're talking any walk of life, what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what we're doing in the broadcast center. You know, I've been up here now in New York for 2 weeks. The first couple of shows, of course, you know, I did from home. Randy and Cross and Aaron Taylor still doing shows from home for our Tuesday Inside College Football. So just the myriad ways folks are handling this disruption, and it's a cross different paths, man. No matter what your life's work is, you've had to adjust, and the same here in our business.
Yeah, no, and Brian, I think one of the more interesting things that we look at now is, you know, it's a ways down the line, is the college football playoff. The Big Ten decided not to play. Now they are playing. The Pac-12 is going to play 7 weeks, which is just odd. It's going to feel weird to have a 7-week season. And obviously they're doing that to try to fit in to the college football playoff. Do you think the college football playoff stays at the prescribed time of year, or do they have to move this back? Because I don't know how the Big Ten is fitting in 8 games in 8 weeks. Because we've seen this already. I mean, teams canceling, postpone games. You push it back. You fit in extra bye weeks. There's no way they're going to get their whole season done.
All of it's emblematic of 2020, right?
Yeah.
And you guys were just discussing Duke and the ACC. Look at North Carolina. Open the season versus Syracuse. We haven't heard from them for a couple of weeks. They've
That's
been
right.
idle. They've had games canceled. Last week it was the Charlotte game that they had to cancel. So everyone's dealing with some type of disruption of their schedule, of their regimen. And now the Pac-12, I agree, it's going to be difficult with no wiggle room. The same for the Big Ten, no wiggle room. That was the keen hindsight of the Big 12, ACC, and the SEC is, you know, give yourself some time.
Yeah, just in case.
Some extra bye weeks. Give yourself some wiggle room to fit all this stuff in. So I don't see how the Pac-12, they're able to get all 7 weeks in, the Big Ten as well. They got to be nimble. So to answer your question, I think you're going to have to slide the college football playoffs. I think that will come into that decision will have to be made, because I think we're going to see some more things occur, unfortunately, that will force the hand of the college football playoff.
So we're talking to Brian Jones, and BJ, I want to hit you with this, because there's not enough tangible stuff on the board yet where we can really start, you know, getting into the weeds of games and stuff. So I want to use this as a launch point. I'm going to a double prong here. Give us a team that is really hyped right now. You know, top 10, obviously, just viewed as a team that's got a real shot to do something special this year, that you believe will kind of wither away and is not a factor at the end of the year. And conversely, an under-the-radar, Tiki loves Miami, an under-the-radar team that might ascend to a spot that nobody sees right now.
So you want me to drop somebody in the grease that's looking pretty good right now?
Correct.
Okay.
Light them up. Light them up.
Well, you know what? That is a damn good question. Y'all 2-2. 3-3 today, man. Wearing me out. It's like an SAT. Wow. I tell you what, I'm on that Miami train as well. I picked against them last week, but I'm impressed. It helps when you have a defense like Louisville that had bust after bust, leaving guys wide open. But give Rhett Lashley, their offensive coordinator, credit. Man, he called a hell of a game and had that defense of the Cardinals dazed and confused. So I like them, and I think they can be a mainstay. To answer your last question first, and as far as who looks good now that could possibly – Notre Dame is going to be that one for me, guys. It was convincing versus USF last week. I mean, they put it on everyone. Even the damn punter was getting knocked out in that ball game.
But
I just don't know if they have the necessary fast-twitch guys in the requisite position to hang with a Clemson, hang with even a Miami. I don't know if they're there. And that was the Achilles heel when they got to the college football playoff a few years back and took on Clemson, and they look slow, they look lethargic. And so I'm not so sure. I'm not sold right now that they can hang with a Clemson or even a North Carolina for that matter.
All right, BJ, the SEC is home on CBS. So let's hit the SEC, cuz they're starting this weekend. There's a couple of interesting tilts in Kentucky, Auburn. I think Auburn, you know, takes care of business there. LSU, Mississippi State, Alabama though. They're playing Missouri. We know this is the situation in Missouri, but Alabama had a little bit of a quarterback controversy, you know, who was going to end up getting the start. They worked it out, and it's this, I forget the kid's name from last year.
Jones.
Yeah, Matt Jones. He's starting. Jones is starting, and he looked pretty good last season. Can Alabama, with everything that they lost, Tua, obviously, and Jerry Jeudy and a couple of his other players are left, but Najee Davenport's still there. Devontae Smith, who I think is the best of the three from last season, he's still there. Waddle's still there. Is Alabama going to be as dominant as we've seen over the last couple of years?
Look at you, man. You said Najee Davenport. You meant Najee Harris.
I mean, Najee Harris. Yeah.
Yeah, he's all everything, man. And I'm going to differ with you real quick on Auburn, Kentucky. I think Kentucky can win that ball game.
Really?
They've got a lot of pieces coming back, and they get their quarterback, Terry Wilson, back. Remember, he went down with that injury.
That's
he's
right.
the only
That's
one
right.
in the history of Wildcats football to throw for over 1,500 and rush for over 500 in a season and was well on his way again last year until he went down. So
yeah, but don't you think Bo Nix is going to get better? Bo Nix is going to get significantly better.
No, I agree. He gets better, but Auburn, they've got a ton of speed. The Shivers kid, the Schwartz kid. But they lost, you know, the big boys on the defensive side of the ball, Derrick Brown.
That's a good point.
Marlon Davidson, they had a couple. Those were number one picks. They lost Igbinemi. He was the number one pick at the cornerback position. So or at least the number two pick. You know, they lost a lot. So I'm going to go to Kentucky in the upset there. But
wow.
Bama is loaded, dude. Bama's going to win the West. Bama, Mac Jones, I didn't even think it was a controversy because this guy got better. He lit up Michigan in the bowl game for over 300 yards. His last couple games where he were over 300 yards. Even in that Iron Bowl, he had to pick sixes, of course. But I thought he would win the job. And, of course, not having a spring helped him because that was less time for Bryce Young, the heralded recruit, to get in there and learn that playbook. But I think Mac Jones is going to be fine. He's going to have a much better grasp of the playbook. And I love Waddle, man. Waddle is my he's my dark horse to win the Heisman because he can do so much.
Yeah.
This guy led the nation last year in punt return average,
right.
24 yards. You saw what he did versus Auburn. He had three touchdowns in the last four ball games. He's a freak, man. This cat can flat out play. Devontae Smith, as you mentioned, is back, and they've got a huge offensive line that's returning. They get some pieces back on the defensive side of the ball that were injured a year ago, especially at that linebacker position. So Bama, I think, you know, they were middle of the pack. They were, ranked fifth in defense a year ago. Last time they were ranked that low was Nick Saban's first year at Alabama. So they're going to be back, and I think they win the West. No problems there.
So we're going to wrap it up. Brian Jones, you'll catch all this tomorrow, 3 Eastern, with Zuck and Jonesy and Coach Rick Neuheisel, of course, Mississippi State LSU. Miles Brennan, the toolbox, is it absolute professional toolbox? I mean, what's in Miles Brennan's toolbox?
Well, he was another highly recruited cat. I think he was at least 4 or 5 star, one of the top quarterbacks coming out in his recruiting class, and now he gets his shot. Now I'm hearing from my guy down at LSU, this guy is overly confident. You know, you don't want to get out over your skis, but apparently he's like, this is my offense, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to run it and put my stamp on it, and we'll see. He's got a big arm. We know that.
Yep.
But he just hadn't had the reps as like a Joe Burrow, and he's still got a hell of a supporting cast at wide receiver with Terrace Marshall and Trey Palmer, and they got 3-4 backs. And we may revert to the running back by committee, as we've seen in years past with LSU. But they're going to be fine. The only thing they don't have, man, is experience, because we know they can recruit. The last 3 out of 4 recruiting classes were top 5, top 7. So the pieces are there. They just haven't been on the field. So I think they can win this first game versus Leach and Mississippi State. Because Mississippi State now on the Leach is going to chunk it a ton. They rush the ball 63% of the time a year ago. Leach wants to pass it about 80% of the time. So, you know, how do you retrofit that offense and now take on these new schemes and concepts? And, you know, my guy there at Mississippi State says, hey, things are clicking on the offensive side of the ball. You got K.J. Costello who transferred 25 starts under his belt at Stanford. So maybe it hasn't been as much of an uphill climb without there being a spring for these guys. And this offense to take hold.
All right. Played linebacker for the Horns back in the day. Brian Jones, CBS Sports College Football Analyst. Brian, appreciate you, buddy. Good spot. Thank you very much, man.
All right, guys. Y'all take care.
Yep.
Take care, BJ.
There you go. Always energetic, always good, always fun. Worthwhile spot there. Teague, let's dive into the Pac-12 coming up next. You and I could set that up. And then we'll get into the diminished magic for Minshew, which evaporated a little bit last night. And obviously, Fitzpatrick was great. And then we'll just go week 3 the rest of the way. Bunch of good quarterbacks. Teams that were supposed to do a little something this year are 0-2, staring at 0-3. So NFL is on the horizon, but we'll do a little more Pac-12, a little more college football next right here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Bam, bam, bam. This is for the G's. This is for the hustlers.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico. Right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So, what are you waiting for? Sharp Tierney rolls in 1 hour from now, week 3 picks, all 10 of them against the spread. So, Get your pens ready. Jot them down. We'll make you a little coin. I heard he's in a good mood today.
Mm-hmm.
Top of the hour. A lot of good quarterbacks. Some with pretty reasonable expectations for this season. 0-2. And looking at 0-3, which based on the extra playoff slot, if you're 0-3 this year, it's probably more like 0-2 in years past.
Yep.
Based on the percentages of teams that start 0-2, those who actually rally to make it. But that's going to be a really interesting conversation because there's a lot of guys with some pressure. But right now, listen, I understand that we all want an answer. The Pac-12's coming back. It seemed like they were absolutely done. But once you got the first whiff of, well, they're having second thoughts,
yeah,
put it down, it's a done deal. They're coming back. They need the money. We get it.
But
I almost think, not that I won't do it, but I almost think it's a fruitless endeavor, almost a waste of time to try to formulate, you know, what's going to happen months from now. Well, the Pac-12's playing seven games.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a 7-0 team, can you really have them represent and vie for one of the four spots in the college football championship?
Yep.
I'd like to answer that now, but I can't because I need to know what happens to the other teams that are ranked. I want to be definitive, and I can't, and it's
impossible.
A little frustrating.
It's impossible to be definitive, BT, and this is what Nick Saban was talking about last week when he said comparing teams is going to be really, really hard this year because they're not common opponents, but you could like extrapolate strength of schedule based upon, you know, teams that are playing outside of conferences and playing other Power Five conferences and those games and how they relate. Like you could create something on paper in your head to justify it. Now, this year, there's no justification for comparison across Power Five conferences. So as a result, it's all look test. It's all like, okay, they looked great, but you don't know the inferiority of some of the teams that these guys are going to that they're going to be playing, and you're going to take into account, you know, opt-outs, you know, these guys that are just, they're not playing. Some of the best players on some of the really good college teams, like Virginia Tech, Caleb Farley, who was the first one to opt out this past year, you know, that's going to impact how they play.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you judge this for the college football playoff is going to be probably the biggest question mark. And they're going to get a lot of scrutiny, you know, ultimately, because it's just not going to feel fair. And in seven games, there are going to be a lot of teams that are just better, and we're going to have a lot of undefeated teams in whatever conference we're talking about. And as a result, you're going to have like six teams that, you know, especially if they don't get a chance to play a conference championship,
yep,
because of the cancellations, like how are you picking it? It's going to be impossible.
It's going to be very tough. You know, listen, every year there's a couple of top 10 teams who distinguish themselves with a very impressive non-conference win in week one that sets the tone, that gives them a little wiggle room should they stumble in conference to get to the championship with a loss. I think that's one thing that I know that's obviously missing, so that complicates it.
Yep.
I don't know. We probably would have heard of it by now. I would love to know, though, if there is the ability. So, because I was going to say, I don't think there's a stipulation already in there because that would have been brought to the forefront. But as you draw up these contracts and as you draw up TV contracts and you draw up all these things that entail or encompass the greater part of a decade, right? Why? I don't know. Is there any way to, based on the pandemic, to make this one year 8 playoff teams?
I mean, I would.
If I was
the college football playoff, now the one logistical challenge would be finding the bowl games and like sites to host those.
You can work around that. That's not that hard.
If you are the Peach Bowl, right, in Georgia, and you're not part of the college football playoff this season, and they call you up and be like, "Hey, do you guys want to be part of the college football playoff this year?" Hell yeah, right? I don't think the bowl games are going to say no to being included in the college football playoff. So that's the least of the issues. But I think it makes sense. It puts us closer to what we see in FCS, in the other divisions of FBS,
mm-hmm,
division, division two,
and FCS.
D2 and 2-3. Yeah. So FCS, D2 and D3, like they have these playoffs. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually more equitable in a sense. I think that would be smart. I think it would legitimize the college football playoff a little bit more, given the uncertainty and the likely scenario where certain teams are playing like six games or five games. If you're the Pac-12, You have seven games, and if one or two gets canceled, you're playing six games. You're going to include these, or you know, five games. You're going to include these guys in the college football playoffs just because they look good against somebody who might be inferior. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make any sense to compare.
Or if a team from the Big Ten has two games wiped off of their slate, and instead of eight in 8 weeks, they've got six to go from.
That's
It would be judged on both sides of the equation. Would be like, well, wow, we're going to really put a team in there that's only played six games. But the converse is, wait, you're going to hold out a team because they've only played six games? They might be one of the top four teams.
Yeah, so the only way to get to the bottom of it is
expand it.
Exactly.
Now, you're going to still have issues like the ninth team, the tenth team, but at least it's a little more equitable. And I think that as fans, those of us who really inhale the sport and want what's fair, as fair as it could be, where there's so much subjective material, we can wrap our minds and, more importantly, our emotions around the 9th, 10th, and 11th best team getting left at the altar. But if you're number 5 or 6, that last month of the season that you no longer have, in essence, equating to about 4 games or so, that shapes every college season.
That does.
So
it does. And
somebody should recommend this and get it out there. You know, we get a ton. Well, we just recommended it. Somebody take our recommendation and just get this thing some traction.
Yeah.
Why can't you do it?
I think they have to do it. I'm really intrigued to see how the Big Ten, in particular, I mean, the Pac-12 is in the same, a similar situation, but they're not expected to have powerhouses out there this year.
No.
SEC is, I mean, USC is, I mean, they're okay, but there's no team out there that you're looking at saying, man, I'm going to miss seeing them be a part of whatever the college football playoff might look like. The Big Ten is different. We don't know what Michigan's going to look like. You know, obviously we can be cynical and talk about Jim Harbaugh's lack of ability to win those big games, but it's still Michigan. It's still Jim Harbaugh. There's a chance, right? Ohio State, definitely, with Justin Fields, who's going to be one of the best quarterbacks this year, at least expected to be, and likely one of the top ones taken in the NFL draft next season, they definitely have a chance to win a national title.
So I agree.
The Big Ten is where you're missing out if these things get messed up and excluded because they end up only playing five or six games.
All right, there you go. Nice little college segment. Obviously, we had Brian Jones on before, so squeezing some college football. Big weekend, it's going to feel like the first real weekend. We've had some games for sure. But here we go. It started to get a little more real. And it got a little real for the Dolphins last night, or it would be very real for the Dolphins if they were 0-3, if they would have lost last night. They get their first win. Fitzpatrick was terrific. Minshew will get into that. And then the third hour is all NFL. And, of course, Sharp Tierney rolls in at 5:20 Eastern. So we've got that for you. We'll hit our Tiki and Tierney Week 3 whip around all the games I don't get to in terms of the point spreads. But first, before we do anything more, we got to get an update. Bob Huesler is on the scene. Here's Bobby. All right. Sunday, the NFL on CBS features some fantastic matchups featuring the league's top contenders. The Raiders on the road taking on the Pats. And Deshaun Watson and the Texans, they need a win. We'll talk about Deshaun a little bit next segment. One of the really good quarterbacks that is yet to get that first dub, taking on the Steelers, who have yet to lose. It all starts with JB and the crew getting you set up for the day, starting Sunday at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. Okay, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, radio.com, Sirius XM 206, Sharp Tierney, 40 minutes, Tiki and Tierney, Week 3 whip around in about an hour or so. The Blast, of course, we'll get to it all. Let me make a statement, and then you try to refute the statement here. You ready?
Okay.
Never before had I'm going to go all in here. I'm going to say in the history. So never before in the history of sport, not just the NFL, you know, let's say post-1980, if you want to keep it, otherwise we'd just get down a ridiculous rabbit hole. But, or since 1970, since the merger, whatever. Never before in our lifetimes have we seen such a transient, such an overlooked, and such an often discarded player like Ryan Fitzpatrick be so interesting.
Yeah.
Rams, Bengals, Bills, Titans, Texans, Jets, Bucks, Dolphins. And what's amazing is he's getting more interesting with age. But think about that. Usually you're cut, you bounce around, you're discarded that often. You're not interesting. You're just, you exist.
Yeah.
This guy is legitimately interesting and fun to watch. And oh yeah, by the way, he's pretty good.
Yeah, that's the thing, BT. He's good. What was it, 2 years ago when he was with the Buccaneers that led the first two games. He threw for 400 something yards.
Yeah, when Jameis was
Jameis was suspended. Yep. He threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns in each of those first two.
One was against the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it was. I remember one was at home and one was on the road. Uh-huh. But yeah, it was just like, dude, who the heck is this guy? And he was 36 years old, or whatever it was. And you know, you kind of became to expect it. The problem with Brian Fitzpatrick, though, is I think that eventually, whether it's, I don't know, attrition, fatigue, as the year goes on, he turns into an interception machine and he starts making mistakes. But, you know, from a leadership standpoint, like a guy who just is never going to give up on himself, like ever. Mm-hmm. You can talk as bad as you want about him. He's never going to get down on himself. He's never going to give up on himself. And that's good for a young team. You got to have some veterans around young teams. The Miami Dolphins are very young, as we saw them strip down a couple of years ago, sending Minkah Fitzpatrick and I'm trying to think of all the other ones. They jettisoned a
Laramie
lot.
Tunsil.
They jettisoned the running back as well.
Landry. Receiver.
They got rid of everybody. Yeah. Drake. They sent to Arizona.
Vernon.
Yep. So everybody they got rid of, and it was to clear cap space, really start over. And what happens sometimes when you do that and then you throw a rookie quarterback in there or a very young quarterback in the mix, you never stabilize. Like, you never get a chance to get good because the quarterback is still learning on the job. So the Dolphins have actually kind of created a playbook on how to restart a team. You need a guy like Fitz. He's not the future. But you need a guy like Fitz for teams that are young and restarting and rebooting.
But he also wasn't the future when he went to the Jets. Mm-hmm. And then Geno Smith got punched in the face by a teammate because he was holding $600 out on him.
Yeah.
And Fitz steps in. They win 10 games. They didn't make the playoffs, but they won 10 games. He had Decker. He had Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
You know, it's the few times that he actually plays with weapons, the guy puts up points.
I know.
Like, I don't know if he was drafted. Was he even drafted? I think he signed with the Rams.
I don't think he was drafted.
He didn't play. He had a uniform, I guess. But the first time I remember Ryan Fitzpatrick really seeing him as a player was when he came in for Carson Palmer.
Seventh round, 250th pick overall.
Okay.
To the Rams,
But he didn't play much, if at all.
No.
And then he goes to the Bengals, and you know, I remember the Jets were playing the Bengals. Carson Palmer got hurt, and this guy comes pre-beard. This guy comes off the bench, and he's running around like a maniac. I'm like, wow, this guy's actually pretty talented.
Yeah.
And then he went to off of what he flashed with the Bengals, the Bills paid him a lot of money. They didn't really provide him the proper insulation, if you will. The expectations were unrealistic, and he kind of imploded a bit.
Yep.
But then, you know, again, I said the Jets, the Bucks, now with Miami, the guy just reinvents himself. His teammates love him. He is he's a straight baller.
Yeah,
there's just no other way to put it. He's a baller.
And for Miami, who drafted their future in Tua, and we talked about this yesterday, there's a little bit of worry, maybe it's strong, but there's a little bit of trepidation with Tua's hip, and they want to make sure that it's fully healed, that he feels fully comfortable, that he gets his strength back, that he's not, you know, thrown in this pressure situation. Ryan Fitzpatrick is like the ideal. He's created this niche for himself that's I don't know if anybody else could do it, or if anybody else would. I don't know if somebody else could do it, but I don't
it
know.
Takes
if
it takes a unique skill set. Yeah, it takes a unique mind.
That's right. I don't know if anyone else could do it as well.
I agree.
As he does it. Because
I agree.
Tua's learning. I'm sure Tua's learning from this and learning from him and some of the throws that he's making and, you know, how to fit them in those windows. And should I take this shot? I'm going to take this shot. Right? That's been one of the, you know, issues with Daniel Jones as a young quarterback. And in his first 2 years, he kind of was just thrown in. He didn't really get to watch Eli, you know, it was bad. And so he just got in and played some really good games, had some really bad games.
Mm-hmm.
Coming into this season, there's no vet around, right, you know, essentially around him. So it's all on him to develop himself and with the coaching staff, which it's harder to do it that way than to do it the way that the Dolphins are doing it, which is get a good vet, who can play. He's going to win some games, going to throw for 300 yards one day, make some mistakes as well, three interceptions he threw against the Patriots, and learn how to rebound from that. It's important to learn how to do that, and mm-hmm. I think Ryan is doing that for Tua.
I want to get into Minshew for a moment. I just want to make one more point on Ryan, because you talk about this like almost like this market that he's cornered, this unique job, this like it. And you're right, there's nobody else that fits that bill, and I think I know the reason. You have to have no ego, but you have to have supreme confidence.
Yes.
And what I mean by that, I know you know, but what I mean by that is, you know, if the ego tilts over and it's unmanageable, you won't allow yourself to go there as the placeholder for a Tua or in theory a Geno, et cetera. And the supreme confidence where you say, all right, I know why they're bringing me in, but damn it, it's going to take a little while before I give that kid the ball.
Yeah.
It's going to take a little while before I let that kid take the ball from me.
That's right. He will give it up.
Yes. When it's time.
If Tua earns it.
Yeah.
He's not going to just be like, all right, kid, it's your turn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, if I could do this for a year, then I'm going to do it for a year. At some point, and probably next year, the Miami Dolphins are going to have to go to Tua Tagovailoa, because we know how this works. After your third year, you got to decide whether or not you're picking up that fifth year option. And so you need some playing time. So it's likely to happen at points this year. It's definitely going to happen next year, but it's not, Fitz isn't giving it up that easy. There's no doubt about it. And I agree. I think that's great for him. Interestingly, Tua is probably the perfect guy to sit behind him and learn, because that's the situation he was in Alabama, it's behind true. Jalen Hurts. And when he was called upon, he was ready.
Mm-hmm. What'd you see from Minshew last night?
A little indecision at points, especially once you got into the second quarter. There was a point where they were throw for throw, Minshew and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And obviously Fitz and the Dolphins were putting points on the board. Gardner Minshew and the Jaguars were not, because it was 21-0. Mm-hmm. But he was making every throw. I think he was 6 of 7 to start the game for 78 yards. It was like, man, he's got a good completion percentage. His yards per attempt. It's not like he's dinking and dunking. Mm-hmm. Like
he's moving out of the pocket.
That's right. It felt like we were going to get that match. And then something happened in the second quarter. And I'd have to go back and rewatch the tape, obviously, to really figure it out. But he started missing. He started becoming indecisive. He was late on throws. And before you know it, the game got out of hand. So I think Gardner, he's still only in his second year. See, this is the difference. Like, you want to compare these two because they have such this moxie about them. But Fitz has been around for 14 years or 13 years, whatever it is. And Gardner Minshew's only been around for two. So it's just a different experience level.
Mm-hmm.
So in big games on a big stage, like we were talking about, Thursday Night Football, Monday Night Football, a big stage, it kind of gets to you a little bit.
But forget about that. Did you see talent?
Yeah, he's always had talent. I mean, we know he has talent.
No, I know, but I like him more than you. Did you see talent?
It was less about talent. It was more about the decisions. Like, he was late. He was late on a couple of throws.
Didn't have DJ Shark either.
Didn't have DJ
Shark. Best.
He doesn't have a cannon. Like, he can't. Like, there was a throw that I think it was right before halftime. They just took a shot. Like, they were on the 45-yard line or whatever it was. They took a shot downfield. It was double covered. If you have a good receiver, they have a faster receiver than the DBs who are backpedaling and can run through that coverage. Mm-hmm. Then you put it out in front of them. You split the defenders, and then he goes and makes a great catch. The ball was short. The receiver almost made the catch, but he just doesn't have a cannon of an arm. And so if he's indecisive, then his balls are going to get knocked down and or intercepted, because they're not going to get there fast enough. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be confident and sure. And when that my receiver hits that break point, the ball is out, or even before then, because I know that's where it's going. When he gets indecisive, that's when he gets in trouble.
Who does he remind you of?
That's a good question. I don't know. Because guys like him usually aren't the starter. You know, there's no star that I'm going to pull out of the woodworks and say, well, Gardner Minshew reminds me of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's unique in that regard.
I got one for you.
Who's that?
I don't know if it's perfect. A little bit of a quicker version of Baker Mayfield.
Baker's got a cannon, man.
He has a cannon.
Baker can get the ball where it needs to be.
Cannon?
Whether it's Gardner can't throw it, you know, over top of a safety that's 15 yards back. You know what? Does that make sense?
Makes total sense.
A safety who's 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, a line of scrimmage, and starts backpedaling when he sees pressure coming at him,
mm-hmm.
Gardner can't throw it over his head. Baker can throw it over his head. That's the difference. It's the arm strength that differentiates it. They got the same swagger, but I think Baker has better arm than Gardner does.
So you think Baker has more talent than Minshew?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Because it's funny. Yeah. I think
Baker's been in his head. He's in his own head too much, Baker Mayfield. Because when he's not, he plays great. In his rookie season, when he was tasked to just, hey, Baker, do this simple stuff. Get the ball out fast. Hit the guy in the middle of the numbers. You know, gun it if you had, whatever. Mm-hmm. He was in his element. He was comfortable. And he looked great that rookie season. Last 2 years, he's been thinking a lot. And can't help it because he's had different coordinators. Or last year, I should say. He was thinking too much. He just wasn't himself. This year, other than week one against the Ravens, who also have a great defense, you know, he's been himself. And, mm-hmm. And I think I'm looking forward to Baker, whether it was week one that we'll see more of or week two that we'll see more of.
Yeah. Two quick observations. Number one, so speaking of Baker, so you know the commercial where he goes, it's going to rain, he's got to go and put the covers on the stadium?
Yeah.
Okay. He goes up there. I just noticed this. How could you not edit this properly in the year 2020? He grabs one cover.
Yes, right.
He covers the chair. Right? Then the guy on the field says, what, we're going to do them all?
Mm-hmm.
And then magically he's got a second cover.
I know.
Okay, that's number one. More importantly, that was such a horrendous tribute, unless I missed something later in the game, to Gale Sayers. Did anybody else notice this?
No, I agree.
You probably didn't, because if you blinked, no kidding, you missed it.
Yeah, you missed it.
They were coming back from commercial, and they had a facial show, like from a game, the Gale's face, and then all it said was Gale Sayers with the Bears logo, and it was gone like that. It just, you know, kind of it became invisible.
Clearly,
it blended. It cleared up.
Yep.
And then they got into Tony Boselli up in their Jaguars booth for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Bad job on that Gale Sayers tribute.
I don't disagree.
That's a bad job.
I don't disagree. It'll be better this weekend, I'm sure.
You can't mess that up on the first game that you played since Gale Sayers passed away. That was weak. I'm sorry. I don't like to call out networks like that, but you can't get that wrong. You can't. All right. Wentz, Watson, Ryan, Cousins, all 0-2. Where's the pressure lie most? Next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.